Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. Your conference is about to begin. Welcome to the Q3 2013 conference call. At this time, all the lines are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. November 14th, 2013. I'd now like to pass it over to our host, Mr. John Oliver Bryce, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Yasser, and again, welcome to Awilco Drilling's Q3 earnings call. My name is John Oliver Bryce. I'm the CEO, and with me on the call today is Ian Wilson, our CFO. So for those of you with access to Awilco Drilling's website, we'll be walking through the Q3 presentation, which is on the website as of this morning. So the highlights then the agenda, we'll be talking about highlights from the quarter. Then we'll go into a bit more detail for the financials. I'll talk a little bit about operations. Then we'll spend some time on the market. We'll have a roundup, and as Yasser said at the end, we'll have a Q&A session. So if you have the presentation in front of you, slide five, it certainly has been a good quarter, so let me run through the quarterly highlights. Number one there is Awilco Drilling has announced a dividend of $1.10. Another highlight during the month, a contract amendment. This is an extension to an existing contract. It was for the Wilh Phoenix with customer Premier Oil, and the extension to the contract is worth $27 million to the contract backlog. The numbers then, the headline numbers, during the quarter, an EBITDA of $46.3 million, and that is from a revenue of $62.3. Our Q3 OPEX, our operating cost per rig, was $73,500 per day, and that is lower than guiding, but we'll explain that a little bit later in the earnings call. We see at the end of the quarter, contract backlog was $800 million. And then the final point, probably the most pleasing result for me during the quarter, was a revenue efficiency during the quarter then of 98.9%. So moving on to the deep numbers in a bit more detail, excuse me, moving to page seven of the presentation for those of you who have it in front of you, we'll look at the Q3 income statement. And I'll let Ian Wilson, CFO, walk us through this slide. So, Ian, can you walk us through this slide, please?
Okay, thanks, John. Yes, the revenue efficiency factor of 98.9 converts to contract revenue for the quarter of $61.4, and that combined with the reimbursable revenue gives us total revenue of $62.3 million. The rig operating expenses, $13.5 million, which equates to the $73,500 per day. G&A expense for the quarter was $4.3 million, and included in that was a provision for LTIP awards of $1.7 million, so the underlying G&A expense for the quarter was $2.6 million, which is slightly below prior quarters and guidance. Other income, that represents $1.2 million in currency exchange gain, and also the realization of a insurance claim that is nearing final stages of conclusion. Depreciation of 4.4, very much consistent with the prior quarters, operating profit of $41.9 million. No particular change in the interest income and interest expense, and the profit before tax is 39.6. Tax expense of $3 million, or equivalent to approximately 8% of pre-tax income. Net profit for the quarter, 36.6. Effectively, earnings per share of $1.22. Onto the balance sheet, the rigs, machinery, and equipment, $244 million. Small movement during the quarter, additions in the quarter was 1.8. We do, at the end of the quarter, have capital commitments of 6.9. And the trade and other receivables combined with the prepayments and accrued revenue primarily relates to the August billing and the September accruals, and those revenue equivalents have all since been paid in cash as we speak. So cash at the end of the quarter was 43.5, Total current assets of 118.5, total assets 364.8. Worthy of note, the long-term interest-bearing debt of 89.8, that represents the amounts due to Transocean. We have since quarter end paid 2.75 million, leaving the long-term portion of 87 million, and that is due for repayment in January 2015. As we do move into Q1 2014, that of course will convert to current debt at the end of Q1. Accruals and provisions, that figure of 18 million, a large portion of that is in respect of the LTIP provision that we've built up over the last 2 years, and some bonus accruals for the offshore personnel. So total equity and liabilities, 364.7 million.
Okay, thanks Ian. So moving on from the numbers now to an operational update. So if you have the presentation, we are now on to slide number 10. First slide there is contract status, Awilco Drilling contract status. The current contract backlog now being $825 million, and that's as of today. So what changed during the quarter? Well, there were two changes to the contract backlog, one small change and one large change. The small change was with the Will Phoenix, and that was a previously agreed option with customer Premier. That was a 70-day option at $315,000. That has moved from 70 days to 80 days at $315,000. That was the small change. The larger change then was the new piece of work, which is priced at $442,500 per day. And that has a minimum firm term of 60 days, but potentially can rise to 165 days. Following on from that work, in direct continuation then, is the Apache contract at $387,500. So a small change and a larger change for the Will Hunter, for the Will Phoenix, sorry, and the Will Hunter had no change for the contract status. Moving on then to operational performance. Very high operational performance then in Q3 at 98.9, as previously mentioned. Continued positive customer feedback, and OPEX within the quarter was still lower than guidance. Original guidance was for operating costs in the mid-80s per rig per day, but actual for the quarter was 73,000. That was due to a couple of reasons. One, the currency upside, but secondly, still a bit of a hangover to the logistics issue that we had in the UK with a shortage of helicopters, meaning mobilising project people offshore was a problem, and therefore we could not spend on the projects during Q1, Q2 and Q3. So that is the reason for the reduced OPEX. Moving forward then on to page 12 of the presentation, if you have it in front of you, look at the dividend. So Awilco Drilling then announcing a dividend of $1.10 per share, and this is very much in line with the company's intention to distribute all free cash over and above a robust cash buffer, so very much in line with that philosophy. And then the two dates that revolve around that dividend, we see the payable, the dividend is payable on the 20th of December. And the ex-dividend date is a month earlier, the 20th of November. So that is the dividend information. Moving forward then, talk about a very important project which is on the horizon, which is the SPS project. This is when the rigs come into a shipyard and they have their 5 yearly checks. And during that yard stay, we take the opportunity to undertake maintenance activity and some upgrading of the rigs. So these SPS projects are due in early 16, but there are only three things that are important in terms of an SPS project, and that is planning, planning, and planning. So here we are in November 2013, and our projects are in early 16, but we've already started the planning. So the focus of this planning then is to ensure the long-term future of both of the rigs. and the remaining fatigue life of these rigs is 18 years. So to get us forward to 18 years, then we are undertaking an SPS priced currently at $20 million per rig, and as part of that SPS cost, it includes inspection work, maintenance work, and some equipment renewal. So that's what's going into the SPS work, but it's probably just as important to understand what's not going into the SPS work. And historically, three areas of work have resulted in cost overruns, and none of these areas are being undertaken within Awilco Drilling's two SPSs in 16. And these areas are major steelwork renewal, which we're not doing. Our rigs are in good condition. The second one is water depth change, and we're not undertaking that work. And the third one is a change in legislation driven by moving a rig from the UK to Norway or vice versa, etc. These rigs are staying in the UK, so no changes are required for a change in legislation. So as well as understanding what is in the SPS, it's just as important to understand what's not in it, and what's not in it is those three most historically risky areas. So over and above the SPSs, which we've talked about the pricing, and the yard stay is approximately 2 months, there's one final area of cost which we've now committed to, and that is to commit to two new BOPs, one for each rig. And the cost for these two BOPs and the ancillary equipment for the rigs is $45 million, and that's for both of the rigs. And that work, that installation of those new BOPs, will happen during the 16 SPSs. So if you follow the same presentation to page 14, a little bit more information about why we are committing to such capital expenditure. The main reasons are identified there in the bullet points. BOPs are the number one source of downtime, so we are replacing our existing 30-year-old BOPs with new equipment. Also, with these new BOPs, we ensure continued compliance with customer and legislative requirements, and also position ourselves potentially for any changes in legislation that we can anticipate by building in some redundancy to these BOPs. Also, with the new BOPs, maximises our potential customer base. Some of the super majors insist on brand new OEMs or OEM BOPs, certainly with a certain number of functions, so we open up our customer base to all of the operators or all of the customers. And it also maximises the rig lifetime. These BOPs will most likely outlive the rigs, so some very good reasons for this capital expenditure. So moving forward, a different subject then, let's look at the assumptions for 2014 for the various models out there. There's a few headline bullets there that we'll just walk through. The first one then for 14, a change in the operating cost per rig, the OPEX. And what we are guiding now is OPEX will move to a higher number of $95,000 per day per rig. And this is a significant change to current guiding. The biggest factor behind this change is a tax which is going to be applied to offshore workers, which previously has not. It's called national insurance. It's similar to social taxes. It's paid by the employer, not the employee, and represents a further 13.8% burden on top of payroll costs. So that charge will come to employers, to all drilling contractors who are operating in the UK from early 2014. So that is very much one of the biggest factors behind this change in OPEX. Some other stuff there, SG&A, $3 million per quarter. And then the last point on this presentation, if you are looking at the presentation on slide 15, a couple of lines on our CAPEX going forward. Within 14, we are again committing to routine CAPEX. These are projects to ensure uptime on the rigs of $15 million between the two rigs for that year. And then there's a new line for the new BOP. Now, this is a $15 million down payment against the $45 million total cost, and that will be payable in 2014 calendar year. So those are the main bullets for the assumptions in the 2014 model moving forward. Let's move on to a quick look at the market. Again, those of you who had the presentation, if we look at slide 17, what that tells you is historic day rates over the last 15 years, and we're very much focusing here on 13. And what that slide tells you is that the spot rate for mid-water semi-submersible rigs in the UK is circa $400,000 a day to $450,000 a day. And that was very much in line with our recent contract extension with Premier at 442.5. So day rates still 400 and above in the UK, and that slide illustrates how the rates have changed over time. Moving to slide 19, this is a look at the market in terms of all of the semi-submersible rigs which are in the UK. Not all of them compete with us. Some of these are deeper water, more bespoke. Examples are Bolster Dolphin and Odfjell Drilling's Deep Sea Aberdeen. Most of the remainder then are direct competitors with Awilco Drilling's two semi-submersibles. Then they are all the same vintage. They are all third generation or rigs that were made in the 80s. And they are all fully contracted at this time. The only exception is a Diamond Offshore rig, which is potentially going to go idle at the start of next year, but I'm quite sure the folks at Diamond are trying to fill that particular idle period. There is demand in the market from majors and independents, so we will wait and see what that picture looks like. Certainly fully contracted at the moment, and we'll see what happens with that particular rig and its impact on the market in 14. So why do we expect the market to be tight beyond 2014? Well, sustained high oil price is well above the investment triggers here in the UK, and this combined with stable tax regime is underpinning operator confidence here in the UK. The UK government is also encouraging drilling activity through its licensing rounds. Major oil companies or operators are committing to drilling programs for a couple of reasons. One is to maintain production due to depleting wells, and the second one is to increase production and capitalize on the high oil price. Also, major oil companies or major operators are now focusing on decommissioning activities, and that is going back to wells, and instead of drilling them, it's to tidy them up, which they still need a rig for. The first major program of that being Hess. Hess has contracted Awilco Drilling's Will Hunter, and that is engaged now in a long-term abandonment activity, and many more operators will be following suit at some point in the future. So that again is driving demand for semi-submersible rigs. Then we have the independent operators continuing to exploit small marginal fields. These companies obviously have more modest drilling programs than the majors, but they serve purpose of very useful purpose of helping to fill up slots, sublet slots within major programs or idle periods when it happens with the drilling contractors. And then finally, the UK market does have barriers to entry. We have seen three entrants to the UK in the last 18 months, all of which have required significant upgrade project costs in order to operate here. So there are barriers to entry to this UK market. So that's a snapshot of why we think the UK market beyond 14 will remain tight. So let me give you a summary of what we said here in the earning calls then today. The market fundamentals in the UK remain positive. Awilco Drilling has a solid contract backlog of $825 million. The company has a continued focus on operational efficiency. We have announced a dividend of $1.10, and the company continues to evaluate growth opportunities, but very much on a case-by-case basis, and those opportunities, if they add value and not detract value or detrimentally affect the dividend story. So that is the quarterly earnings call. I'd like to hand back to Yasser for our Q&A session.
Thank you, Mr. Bryce. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. If your question has been answered or you would like to withdraw your question, press star 1 again. The lines are now open for questions. Mr. Bryce, it appears our first question is from Harry Wong. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Great numbers. Very impressive.
Thank you. Thank you.
I apologize because I just got onto the call, and so if you already answered questions about insurance coverages, we can move on. But I was wondering, could you give us a little bit of color, not only on insurance coverages for the rigs, but also on what limits are for liability policies, if you feel comfortable discussing that in a public forum?
Yeah, I'll take that question. Hi, Harry, it's Ian here.
Hi, Ian.
Yeah, the insurance coverages that we've got a couple of main policies. The hull and machinery policy is based upon a rig valuation of between 240 and 280, and that was an independent valuation. So we've got coverage in place for $260 million for hull and machinery, and that carries a deductible of $1.5 million. And then the P&I insurance that we have, the maximum cover that we have for that is based on $225 million with a $25,000 deductible. We also do carry loss of hire insurance, and that's based upon a coverage of $303,000 per day with a 45-day deductible, up to a maximum of 120 days. And we do have some extended covers specifically for likes of some pollution by blowout or contractual liability, and they offer lesser amounts. But that's the principal insurance covers that we have.
And just to follow up, if I may, is the $260 million per rig, or is it for both rigs combined?
That's per rig.
Oh, okay. That's all I have for now. I'll get back to the queue. Thank you.
Thanks, Harry. So back to Yasser.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. So we have another question here from Gavin Ritchie. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Is there any chance you guys do an ADR program in the U.S. next year?
Can you expand on that?
Get a U.S. listing in addition to the whatever pink sheet listing that's in the U.S. right now?
No, at this point we're covered by the Oslo Stock Exchange, and we have no plans at this point to change that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It appears we have a follow-up question from Mr. Harry Wong again. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. I was wondering, I was looking at the Arctic Securities research report that was discussing demand in the North Sea for contract drilling. And do you still see strength going out to 2017 to 2018 in terms of your forecasts, or would you expect it to moderate a little bit based upon production?
Good question. I've been asked that a few times today already. So. Let me give you a good answer. We think 13-14 is going. Sorry, 16 is going to look like 13-14. We see a lot of the rigs on contract just now with majors rolling over. We also see a small independents helping to prop up the sublet market. So we don't see changes on the horizon, and the reason for that is the fundamentals remain positive, and that is the government is pushing through licensing. Major operators in the UK certainly maintaining production because of the wells depleting. It's drilling to keep the same level of production, but also looking to capitalise on a high oil price. But there's in the UK also there's a demand which is it's probably not talked up enough, and that is the decommissioning, and that is all the wells that are sitting there that are not producing any more oil, and they have to be tidied up. And a drilling rig that has drilled the rig in the first place has to go back, pull out the conductors, pull out the casing, cement up the well, and basically tidy it up. And so there is an enormous amount of demand just waiting for rig availability as well. And more operators are being pushed by the government to do this. And more operators are actually talking about, well, how are we going to do it? When are we going to do it? So from drilling for oil, we don't see the operators changing their behavior. And in terms of operators doing additional work in terms of abandonment, we see that in the background as well increasing. So we don't see, with these fundamentals, demand going down. And I think possibly the Arctic Securities article you're referring to talked a little bit about a big influx of rig availability in the next few months to do with sublets. Well, we're not entirely sure if that sublet availability will materialise. One of the sublets that was talked about was on the Will Hunter, which is one of our rigs, because our customer was operating so quickly they were going too fast for the planners. That has subsequently changed. It's unlikely that will be a sublet. So that's one sublet not going to happen. The other two sublets from Talisman, we'll wait and see if they actually materialise. And then we're basically back to one rig with potential availability next year, but yet there's still demand for it. So I don't think there's an instant change, and I don't see a change in 16 or 17 coming, because I think the fundamentals are still very positive.
Mr. Bright, if I could ask a follow-up. Other than capping wells, if we can put that aside, and maintenance, which of course is required for a lot of these wells, could you talk a little bit about the percentage of the company's activity which is related to exploration versus development wells?
So I'll have to give you an educated guess at the moment, but I would say that the operator community, it's at the maximum, it's about 30% in terms of exploration versus 70% development. That's an educated guess for the major operators. With the small independents, most of their work is based on exploration, but they represent a very small part of the market.
And for what you expect for a Wilco Drilling itself, if you have an idea.
So, Wilco Drilling moving forward, we have a long-term program with Hess and the Will Hunter, and that is exclusively abandonment. With the Will Phoenix, that's a combination of Premier and Apache. Premier is doing development, and Apache have a three-year term, and they haven't yet told us what they're going to do with the 3 years, so we wait with great interest to see if we're development or exploration with Apache, but the rig is suitable for both.
And my last question for the day, the numbers are just amazing. In that context, in 2014, it looks like you're getting 442,000 per day on the Will Phoenix and 385 for a couple months in June and July and maybe the end of May. If there is a potential extension, will that still be at the $442,500 per day rate with Will Phoenix, or would that be at a different rate?
No, you're correct. It will be extended at the same $442,500 a day for potentially, that's another 105 days potentially.
That's outstanding. Have a wonderful day. Amazing numbers. Extremely impressive.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
At this time, Mr. Bryce, we don't have any further questions.
Okay, so if there's no more questions, I guess I'd just like to thank the participants who've called in to the Awilco Drilling PLC Q3 earnings call, and hand back to you, Yasser, to close the call.
Thank you, Mr. Bryce. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us tonight. We ask that you please disconnect your lines.